It was wonderful to see all your faces appearing as we started our chant this morning, so it's wonderful to have you all here. In our very rich discussion last week of Shemot, the first Torah reading in the book of Exodus, we began to discuss the barriers in our own personal paths to freedom, to expanded awareness. And Rabbi Shefa Gold reminded us that the story of leaving Egypt, the foundational story of our people, is the story of our journey from slavery to freedom. This journey home, she writes, is the story of consciousness evolving from narrowness and separation to expansion and awareness of its identity in the One. She reminds us that it is this journey from slavery to redemption that each of us must make each day in order to experience the freedom and expanded consciousness that is our true inheritance. So I love this idea that our true inheritance is the spaciousness of connection to the One rather than a particular place with boundaries, that we can always disagree about where are the boundaries. So our inheritance is this boundlessness of awareness. So this week's reading, Va'era, I Appeared, describes the barrier to the barriers to our liberation and what's needed to overcome the barriers. As Yocheved often says, the Torah provides the instructions for our meditation practice, and in doing so, Torah provides the roadmap for spiritual liberation, the journey we need to make each day from isolation to connection, from separateness to oneness. So today I'll describe how this week's Torah reading and some basic Buddhist teachings both describe the obstacles to liberation that we need to recognize in order to reconnect with expanded awareness. The Torah reading begins with God speaking to Moses and explaining, "I am the same God who appeared to your forebears, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, as El Shaddai, but I did not make myself known to them by my name, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, Ehyeh Asher Ehyeh, the unfolding of reality in each moment." God describes the covenant to give them the land of Canaan. And we may interpret this inheritance, as Shefa Gold does, as the gift of expanded consciousness, the gift of awareness of connection with oneness, the gift of the spaciousness in which all our thoughts and worries and fears and pains can be held gently, lovingly in awareness. God tells Moses, "I have heard the moaning of the Israelites because the Egyptians are holding them in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. Tell them, I am the Lord, I will free you from the labors of the Egyptians and deliver you from their bondage. I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I, the Lord, am your God who freed you from the labors of the Egyptians." But when Moses told this to the Israelites, they would not listen to Moses because of shortness of spirit and hard servitude. So Va'era identifies the obstacles that prevent the Israelites and us from starting out on the journey to freedom. Mikotze ruach u me'avoda kasha. Kotzer ruach is translated by Everett Fox as shortness of spirit, by others as impatience, or even shortness of breath. And any of these translations suggest that their spirits were crushed, stunted. They did not have the capacity to even listen to this amazing proposal. It's literally a proposal. I'll be yours, you'll be mine, from God. How often are we worn down, depleted, and unable to hear the potential for connection to nature, to people offering help? So that's really what I'm interested in today, is can we become aware of those moments when we're unable to listen to the messenger? And the second reason, because of hard servitude, working too hard, harsh labor. How often have we been too preoccupied with work or other tasks to pay attention to family and friends? Too preoccupied with the problem to even begin to think more flexibly about where help might come from? As I say this, I think of the words we sing each Shabbat, Essa Einai, I lift my eyes to the mountains, from where will help come? Help comes from Adonai. So we first have to lift up our eyes. There are many examples of this, some of which we mentioned last week. Abraham at the door to his tent, at the moment, right after the circumcision, he lifted his eyes and there were the messengers who said that Sarah would have a child. And then, of course, at the moment when he was about to sacrifice Isaac, he had to look up to see the messenger that had been right in front of him all along, the animal who was meant for the sacrifice. Hagar in the desert had to look up to see that there was a source of water for her son. And of course, Moses at the burning bush. They all had to look up from whatever was preoccupying them to see the miracle that had been there all along. And so these are the things that Vayera tells us get in the way. Our spirits were too stunted, too narrow, too crushed, and we were overworked. And there are other obstacles to embarking on this journey that come up in this reading as well as those that follow. We were afraid to leave the security and the comfort of our miserable but familiar situations. And we were oppressed by a ruthless dictator and so used to living in fear of punishment. So used to living in fear of punishment that our minds no longer seem to have the option of considering daring solutions. All these obstacles reflect shortness of spirit, the narrowness and inflexibility of thinking that arises when people are too oppressed to hear the invitation to connect with the more expanded awareness. As I say this, I realize some of us may be thinking, what is this spaciousness thing? So I'll give one more description, which, as always, will be totally inadequate because we each experience these nonverbal states in our own way, which cannot be communicated in words. Nevertheless, it can be helpful to recognize that most of the time our attention is focused on the objects of our attention, the content of what we're thinking. I'm going to check the weather report. I have to add up these expenses. I'm thinking about what to write for this talk. We may focus also on lovely memories or catastrophic fears, but regardless of how pleasant or unpleasant, all these thoughts narrow our focus onto something. Of course, we need this type of thinking and focus in order to function in the world. And this thinking is effective in getting things done. We need it. But it does not necessarily lead to a sense of confidence in our ability to meet life as it unfolds. Rather, this style of thinking often leaves us with the thought, I need things to go this way. I'm working hard at this because I won't be able to manage if it doesn't work out this way. This kind of thinking can leave us with more clinging to having things the way we want them to be. It doesn't have to, but it can. And usually, when we have no object to focus on, most people slip into what is called the default mode of brain activity, which we might describe as a daydreamy, less focused state that often revolves around ourselves, what others think of us, what are we thinking of others, how will things go from us. It's less focused, but it's still not spacious or open because it's all about me. How am I doing? In contrast, most forms of meditation practice direct us to shift our attention from the objects of our awareness to awareness itself, to the infinite space of knowing, feeling, being with, rather than on what we know, think, or feel. When we sit with just perceiving whatever is arising in this moment, we are resting in the openness of mind. It's a shift from specific objects in the foreground of consciousness to the infinite background of awareness. Happily, we have help from many teachers who can give us guidance, which I will share with you. And if by the end of the talk, words like spaciousness still feel like jargon, please bring it up for discussion, because you are not alone. When I first thought of discussing obstacles on our path to freedom, I immediately remembered one of my favorite examples from Dharma teachings, a metaphor offered by Pema Chodron about three poisons that can become three medicines with the help of our sitting practice. You may have heard of these three poisons that distort our thinking and behavior and jerk us around and make us oblivious. They're often called craving, aversion, and delusion. Like it, don't like it, or don't care. Pema Chodron describes these as passions or craving, aggression or aversion, and ignorance. Addictions are examples of craving. I have to have this or I will not be okay, and I'm totally preoccupied with getting it or thinking about what I'll do when I get it. And that sets us off on a path of thinking about how we're going to get it. Aversion can come in the extreme form of rage or the garden variety form of irritation. The person sitting next to me in meditation is making the most annoying breathing noise, and that's all I can think about the whole sit. And so aversion sets us off into thinking how we can get rid of something. And ignorance is not knowing, not noticing, maybe actively repressing either the craving or the aversion to the point of numbness. And we, at that point, we don't even know what we want. So Pema writes in a wonderful book called Start Where You Are, the three poisons are always trapping you in one way or another, imprisoning you and making your world really small. When you feel craving, you could be sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon, but all you could see is this piece of chocolate cake that you're craving. With aversion, you're sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon, and all you can hear is the angry words you said to someone 10 years ago. With ignorance, you're sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon with a paper bag over your head. The first time I taught this passage, someone responded, "Well, that's if you're sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon." And that comment illuminated the unspoken message here, that every moment we are sitting on the edge of the Grand Canyon, a vast, magnificent vista that is stretching out before us, that we are not able to see because of these obstacles. A proposal from Yod-Heh-Av-Heh, for example, offered by Moses, that we, the Israelites, are not able to hear because our spirits are shortened by the three poisons, craving, "I just want a good dinner and to go to bed," aversion, "I don't trust this guy who just made our lives harder," and ignorance, "Nothing I do matters anyway, why bother?" So what does Pema Chodron recommend? Counterintuitively, she says, whatever you do, don't try to make the poisons go away. Don't try to get rid of them. Because if you're trying to make them go away, you're losing your wealth along with your neurosis. We usually throw away the opportunity to experience these raw feelings. We throw it away by taking action or repressing. When that object of craving appears, or that annoying person walks by, then strong feelings arise. It may be our style to take action. If it's craving, we try to get that thing we want. If it's aversion, we do everything we can to get away. And the intense feelings dissipate through these activities without contributing to self-awareness. Or we may instead repress the strong feelings, telling ourselves, oh, that poor innocent person, I shouldn't put that person down every time he walks by. And eventually, we don't even know how we feel, because repression can be a way to get to ignorance. So Pema notes that acting out and repression are the way we shield our hearts, the main way we never really connect with our vulnerability, our compassion, our sense of the open, fresh dimension of our being. By acting out or repression, we invite suffering, bewilderment, and confusion to intensify. The alternative is discovering how to hold our seat and feel completely what's underneath all that storyline of wanting and not wanting. When it comes to the three poisons that are the three seeds of virtue, the instruction is to drop the storyline and use the situation as an opportunity to feel your heart, to feel the wound. Feel the wounded heart that's underneath the addiction, the loathing, or anger. And these are Pema's words. So that these three poisons can become three seeds of how to make friends with ourselves. That's another wonderful Pema quote, is this practice is how we make friends with ourselves. So, from reading Exodus, what is it that we need to not just get rid of? There is, of course, so much in Torah that is difficult and uncomfortable to acknowledge as part of our spiritual heritage. But if we see these as poisons, this wanting to get rid of something, like maybe we feel that way about the plagues, how can we turn our aversion to these things in Torah into seeds or medicine? Or what in our lives are the poisons that can be medicine? What makes us afraid to leave the narrow places where we're stuck? So let's take a moment to think about what kind of personal mitzrayim we're stuck in. What situation is constraining or shortening our spirit, making us work too hard to hear the messenger? And how do we deal with it? Is it by taking action? I'll just stop talking to this annoying person. Or repression, no, I need to be kinder to everyone. They don't really bother me that much. But what if we don't get rid of that raw energy of craving or aversion and sit with it and allow it to be there without feeling compelled to act or repress? What will we learn? What if we decide not to work on fixing a situation through action, not to repress the feelings, but just to hold our seats? What comes up? I look forward to your comments and reflections.